We are back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell is with me. And we are with Per Bach, who is a physicist who is studying a range of phenomena, if I may, that we think we understand, but maybe we are only just beginning to tiptoe toward. Tell us about power laws. I have just the tiniest bit of information that tells me that I'm supposed to know that power laws play a part in this and that you've studied them.
A power law is a mathematical formula that tells us about how many large events we have every time we have a small event. Suppose we take earthquakes. Every time we have one earthquake of size 9
on the Richter scale.
On the Richter scale, mm-hmm. Yes, we have 10 earthquakes of size 8 and 100 earthquakes of size 7 and 1,000 of size 6. And so on. So there's a mathematical formula that links those probabilities of having earthquakes of various sizes.
And that's been demonstrated?
Formula, yes, that was well known way before me. Gutenberg and Richter, they were way before I was. That was in the 50s. And so they came up with this observation that there was a very simple mathematical formula that linked the amount of small earthquakes with the amount of large earthquakes. And that formula is a power law. And those power laws characterize many of the phenomena that I'm dealing with. If the large earthquake, say, were a completely different physical nature of the small ones or the intermediate ones, one would not expect that there would be such a very well-defined mathematical formula that would link how many there are of each size. But there is. And that tells me, as a physicist, that there is some kind of general phenomenon going on here, that we do not need theories of small earthquake and theories of intermediate earthquake and theories of large earthquake, but we need a general theory of all types of earthquakes, all sizes of earthquakes.
Does that go back to the notion of self-organized? Is that
That's
part
what
part of
the critical state does. Only if the system is in the critical state do we get this Gutenberg-Richter relation between the number of large earthquakes and small earthquakes. If we were in the subcritical state, the ordered state, we would have only small earthquakes and everything would be nice and fine. And if we were in the supercritical state, we would have rumbling and earthquakes going on all the time. But we don't.
And this is sort of the same story that you're telling me about extinctions, isn't it?
It's the same story. We sit right between those extremes.
If
biology was in the subcritical state, there would be only small extinction events. Actually, to tell the truth, there wouldn't be any evolution at all because things would be frozen and stagnant if we were in the ordered state.
Equilibrium
equals death, precisely. We cannot even imagine getting where we are if things were in equilibrium at some point. It's completely illogical.
Now, I will say that people misunderstand, or at least I've been told, misunderstand the second law of thermodynamics, which we think of as entropy. And the fact that only, if I understand it correctly, only applies in an equilibrium state says that things are not as perhaps we had thought.
They are not the way that we think about it. We traditionally have thought about it. Statistical physics has been misused. Statistical physics deals with a situation where we have very many systems in kind of an ensemble that we then can average over. But in evolution, in biology, well, in nature itself, we have only one state. We start with a big bang and things evolved and went through one more complex state than the other. First we got galaxies and we got supernovas and we got all kinds of interesting things in the universe, and eventually we got the Earth, the solar systems with our geophysics, and then we got eventually life and biology, and then we got us humans and economics and so on, and it all came out of the Big Bang. And it's only one system. It's one state. We cannot make thermodynamics of it. It was one trajectory in a dynamical system when it went off in some very unlikely direction. It could have gone in many other unlikely directions, but he chose this one. And we cannot do equilibrium statistical physics on one state. So don't even think about thermodynamics when we talk about life and economics and geophysics and so on and all that.
As a layperson, and I'm trying to translate this for my sake, it seems that a lot of the equilibrium systems that are described, gases, the economy, mm-hmm. are done by making simplifying assumptions and setting very clear barriers around
yes.
the external world.
Yes.
To the extent that that's the case, if those assumptions, that isolation is artificial, then what we're describing is artificial. And I think that's what you're saying, is that the artifice does not apply to the world we inhabit.
We can take part of the world, like the room we are sitting in, and take the gas in that room and do statistical physics and so on, because that consists of very many identical parts, atoms, and so on. But for the entire universe, we can't do that. The trajectory, the symmetry has been broken. We go out in one particular trajectory. Contingency is important in what is happening.
Contingency.
That means that our existence dependent on some fish swimming to the left rather than to the right 500 million years ago. If that had not happened, biology would have been entirely different.
This is an historical argument.
That's a historical argument. But we know that. We know that everything around us is very much contingent on minor events. If my great-great-great-great-grandfather 20 generations ago had not met my great-great-great-great-grandmother 20 generations ago, you wouldn't have been here. The whole world would have been completely different. Kennedy wouldn't have lived. The president, Clinton, wouldn't have lived. And so on and so forth.
That almost sounds like...
It's difficult in understanding the enormous possible phase space of things that could have
phase
happened.
Phase space.
All the things that could have happened.
Is that why we've tended to avoid it for so long, just because it's so difficult, and we tend to focus on those things that we think are solvable, tractable problems that we can write equations for? I mean, it's a psychological question, but it's a real question.
That's all we can do. We can only even imagine what I would call the adjacent possible. We cannot imagine what's entirely different from our world, what could have been. When we think about Martians, they're like us, except that they're greener, have long noses and stuff.
And that fish swam the other way.
If that had swam the other way, we cannot even imagine what would have happened.
We're locked into our history.
We are locked into our history. Our brain cannot visualize what could have happened, really. It only can visualize what did happen and sort of extrapolate a little bit.
Physicists seem to want to say how it has been and therefore how it will be. You're a physicist. And what I hear you say is, we can describe what has been, but we cannot describe what will be.
Right. That's because of massive contingency, that things depend on minor detail. And all the systems that I'm studying, they behave like that. They give me an insight into why it is like that. I can take my sand pile, for instance, or some other system that I'm studying, and let me just move one grain of sand a little bit. Okay. I move one grain of sand, and then follow what happens to the sand pile. Then it will follow a completely different trajectory. What was before a huge avalanche, size 10 on the Richter scale, just became a little trickle. And what was a little trickle would become an enormous avalanche somewhere else, perhaps. So very tiny differences affect the entire trajectory of the whole system.
Forgive me for going from physics that you were describing to a very personal kind of thing. That I could get up in the morning and be frozen by all of these contingencies of which you speak.
Yeah.
Since I don't know what anything will affect, anything will affect anything, the temptation is just to say, well, I'm not going to do anything.
Well, we can locally affect what we're doing here and now. Again, you know, come back to the sand pile. We can see when the grain of sand is coming and it's nearby, and we can prevent it, perhaps. Or maybe we can push it over to the neighbor or something. But we cannot affect the whole system.
The other side, of course, of what Paul is saying is that what you're describing sounds like a radically non-deterministic environment, which would say that our actions in some ways are our own, and in some very substantial ways we can have effects that are not predetermined.
Absolutely. the idea.
So it's either half full or half empty.
The idea that the world is deterministic is a complete illusion. Even if the individual laws of physics are deterministic. Well,
it was from Stuart Kaufman that I then took the next leap that all you can do is do your best.
We can say that. But you can. We know the fact that we can affect what happens here and now and so on. But we cannot predict what will happen in the future. We don't like that.
No, we don't.
We like to predict. We would like to know whether there will be global warming or not. But we don't. Well, and we don't know if we do something that would increase or decrease the possibility that we get global warming. We cannot even say, let's at least do something. And maybe then we can prevent it, because perhaps by the very fact that we try to prevent it, we will get it. Or we'll get something worse or something different.
So all you can do is do your best.
Yes. Is that so bad?
No, that's not bad.
That is life. That is how it is. We are scientists. We don't try to make things the way that they are not. We would like to describe things the way they are. And they are the way that we cannot predict. And it's nice, it's interesting to try to have a theory or a framework, a conceptual framework, where you can formulate the fact that we cannot predict things.
What you're describing, for most people, I think, does not sound like traditional science. One of the attributes of science, you know, item one, number one, is the ability to write laws that allow you to predict.
Yes.
What's going to happen. And you're talking as a scientist, and you're saying that that applies in certain select spaces, but
yes,
that is not uniformly the case with respect to science.
We cannot make specific long-term predictions in complex systems, but of course any science has some features that you can test and predict. So the prediction has to be on the statistical level. We predict how many large events there are every time there are so many small events. We can, for instance, predict the distribution of earthquakes in the future. We can say also in the future there would be a distribution given by this Gutenberg-Richter law, the power law. And there are many other such features that we can compare at the statistical level. There's sort of nothing new about that, because we already have statistical physics itself, where predictions are made on the statistical level. We have quantum mechanics, where also we have to predict on the statistical levels. And we had good old-fashioned chaos theory, where we can also only predict on the statistical level, so there's nothing new with that.
This is Per Bach. We're going to be back with him in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Per Bach in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We'll all be back in just a moment. We hope you'll be with us, too.